Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Ryan, again, part two.
Part two. We're going to talk about the IFC comedy series Stand Against Evil. Thank you so much, Ryan, for coming back on to the podcast to cover this show with me.
Yeah, thank you once again, Chinlin, for having me back. It's always a delight. Very happy to be here. And I can't wait to get into the spoiler parts of this show. And listeners, if you decided to check it out after the last episode, please, you know, comment, you know, let us know what you think. You know, we love to talk to you about the show, or maybe what you didn't like. But if you're going to say what you didn't like, please come up with a real reason so we can at least engage on why you did it. Because not every show is for everybody. If every show was for everybody, it would be very boring. So like I tell my students, I'm not interested in if you think it's good, bad, you like it, you don't like it. I'm interested in how you think what you think or why you think what you think. So please do share, even if it is not for you. I mean, Isaac will at least engage with you because it's clearly not for him. We love talking with you. So just welcome back. And again, Chinlin, thank you for having me back. And it's always a pleasure of mine. This is spoilers. Everything proceeding after this could potentially and most likely spoil the show for you. So if you are listening, you have essentially signed the dotted line stating that you will not hold us liable for ruining anything for you moving forward. Legal, binding, so you are consenting to this as you proceedeth forward.
No one's done that before. That's good. That's very good. We don't have a lot of characters to really discuss, like character development. The only person who kind of goes through a little bit of development is our main character, Stan. So we're going to start off just talking about Stan, because throughout the whole show, he's the one who kind of goes through... I mean, he's still the same person by the end, but he's more aware of things and more subject to listening, you know? So we're going to start off with Stan and talking about his character development and just how he is in general and why we like him so much. I think, first off, Stan is one, he's like the stereotypical grumpy, lonely old man, widower?
He is a widower. He was widowed.
Recently widowed. Wanted to make sure I got my terminology right.
Oh, that's okay. For the longest time, I didn't know either. So he was, his wife passed away. And that's how the whole, that is the very first scene, you guys, that we get is at a funeral.
Mm-hmm. Is recently widowed. He's totally sexist, but that's kind of expected out of somebody like him in a small town. But despite his sexist remarks, you watch the show for him. John C. McGinley is excellent. He was one of the reasons why I even started watching this show. I saw a thumbnail on Hulu a long time ago, and I was like, hey, it's that guy from Scrubs. Totally want to see this. And I'm so glad I did. Stan is basically like Perry Cox from Scrubs. And I already mentioned this in the spoiler-free episode, but I kind of just want to reinforce it. In terms of his, like, his rantings and his, like, attitude about, like, younger people in the show.
And women. Don't forget, women. They're always got to be right. They got to be right. Always got to be right. Got to be right. Got to be right. Always got to, you got to be right. And so that, I think that that's in the very first episode, you guys. And it, just the way he delivers it. It is priceless. Yeah, you could you could, just make a big stink over his attitudes, but that's part of his character. But you're willing to accept it because you learn that Stan really has a heart of gold. It's often difficult to find, and you do have to search. But he really cares about his community and his friends. Mm-hmm. And that is just him, and it's just him. That's just him. But he, just his delivery of that rant when he first beats up with Sheriff Barrett is just great. And it's just a taste. I mean, he goes off on these rants, and his rants are hilarious.
And most of the time, he's just ranting to himself.
Yes, that's very true. Very, very true.
Despite the sexist remarks, like, honestly, you watch the show for him, and I mean, it's just a TV show. Like, it's not like I would befriend someone like him in real life.
He would be a very difficult person to be friends with in real life. But like I said in our spoiler-free episode, you know, kind of reminds me a lot of one of my closest friends, and it took me a little while to warm up to him, but there was just something there, and it's just a genuine, sincere heart, and that's what I think, both of them really share. Even though on the outside, they're real gruff and
gotta be all manly and macho.
Yes,
and
like he is very much the woman, make me a sandwich. Now, not anymore. He's married, and so he's that part's definitely been toned down. But before he started dating his now wife, that's how I characterized him. He was like, woman, make me a sandwich. And so that was him. So what's funny is like he's married and I'm still single as fuck. And so he's the one. It was like all like woman, make me a sandwich. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, could just a guy go out with me two or three times in a row? That's all I'm asking. And so he remind me of him because there's something charming there. The same reason why we, like Archie Bunker. Archie Bunker on his show was everything wrong with Middle America. But yet, so much of what Archie, Bunker would talk about, created these great learning opportunities in the show to address racism and sexism and the sexual revolution and, like, all these things through this character of Archie Bunker. And so he kind of, for the older listeners, you probably get that reference a little more, unless you're just a sitcom junkie like I am. We kind of have something similar in Stan. But yeah, he, in real life, to your point, probably not the first person you would seek to make your friend. But if you take the time to get to know them, then they're like, wow, I'm so very happy to have you in my life.
For sure. And he's just one of those characters you grow to love instantly. And you like him more and more every season, I feel. Because I think I liked Stan in the first season for sure. I think I liked him even more in the second season when he is trying to save Eve from the past. Yes. And then later that season when he's trying to save his wife from dying by time traveling back. And that is tropey because, man saves woman twice, attempts to save woman twice. but I get that's tropey, but it's... If you acknowledge it and you're okay with it and you enjoy it, I think the trope works in its favor. I mean, it's a comedy, basically.
Yes, and we sometimes counteract and answer those tropes with modern, like we take his archaic idea and we counteract it with something modern. One great example is in the, I believe it's the second season, in which we're kind of recreating the final scene from Jaws. And so we have, like, he says, smile, you son of a bitch. And then she's like, no, I was supposed to say it. And then, and that's Evie speaking, by the way. Evie says, no, I'm supposed to say it. So Evie comes in and she's going to save the day. Then what ends up happening his daughter, just based on her name.
Denise.
And so Denise comes in and she says, smile, you. And then she says, like, you really mean person. So she just, like, she doesn't say, smile, you son of a bitch. And so then she actually kills the monster. And so we have the kind of the the patriarchal archetype, you know, a damsel in distress, you know, Stan's going to come in and save it. But then it's like, no, Evie's actually going to save them. But then it doesn't end up being Evie. It ends up being Denise. And so we might introduce a situation through his outdated perceptions of people and culture and time. But then the show answers it with, you know, a more well-rounded, you know, modern view, you know, of this, in which women can save themselves, and so they don't always need the guy to come in, and so they can, and so I like how we answer that. They're polar opposites, but those polar opposites really help to shape a lot of what we have in the show, and. And they all get, you know, adequate screen time, and we're, you know, there's no, like, he's, and he is allowed to save the day, so we don't take that away from him. He is sometimes allowed to save the day, and I like that. So we don't, you're like, nobody wants to be helpless, nobody wants to be saved all the time, and I like how in the show, they all get to take part in saving one another. But I like how it isn't just him coming in and saving the world, because in reality, there are a lot more people other than, you know, middle-aged white men who can come in and save us from total destruction. But yet he still gets the opportunity to come in as a knight in shining armor occasionally. So everybody gets to save the day, and they do it in a way that I think does a good job of commenting. There's some great social commentary on whatever the conflict, you know, happens to be at that time.
Mm-hmm. What did you enjoy about Stan?
Oh, like that he's an equal opportunity offender. He offends everybody. And he is not ashamed of it. And so there is no stone left unturned. He has some kind of sarcastic or facetious remark to just everybody except for, you know, middle-aged, middle-class, you know, white men. And so everybody else, he does. And it's just, his rants are fun. And so he just offends everybody. But you know what it is? He doesn't hate anybody, though. Like, he doesn't say these things because there's not a hating bone in his body, except for the evil that he's facing. He doesn't hate anybody. He just has his rather outdated views, and he just lets people know, you know, what these views are. But he is on brand. He shoots straight. You know exactly where he stands on everything.
You can read him like a book.
Exactly. Spark notes, even. Like, you've got it. he has an incredibly keen sense of common sense. And so a lot of what he says, you know, might be offensive on one hand, but then whatever they're facing, oh no, he's actually highlighting some stuff that is kind of true, you know, in the instance that we're in. And so he's got a lot of great common sense, and after you get past his rather offensive nature, you really want to have him as your friend. You certainly don't want Stan as your enemy. So you want to have him as your friend. I also just think it's funny, and throughout the entire series, that he just wants to do nothing and can't even do that. And that's a quote from the show, you guys. He's sitting here in his lazy boy recliner. He's kicking back, puts the little, you know, the stand up, and has got a beer in his hand, and then something happens. He's like, all I want to do is do nothing, and I can't even do that. And so he just wants to enjoy his retirement, and he can't do that. And so, I mean, how many of us sometimes want to do absolutely nothing, and then we can't even possibly do that? So we can identify with Stan on that. And Stan is a survivor. Throughout this entire show, he is a survivor, and he wants to see his friends survive too. So he's going to do whatever it takes to ensure that you're safe. And even though he might want to save the day all the time, he realizes that he alone can't save the day and must partner with this woman sheriff, this female sheriff, and he has to partner with her, even though women, you know, shouldn't be sheriffs and blah blah blah, like all these rants that we get. And so he's got a partner with her, and they do. So we've got some really fun teaching moments. Now, these aren't deep teaching moments. This is a very surface level show, but it doesn't go without its moments where Stan, you know, is able to learn from the error of his outdated ways.
I just want to say one more thing, is that one of the most redeeming qualities of Stan, despite some of his flaws that we already mentioned, is that he admits that he does need other people's help. Like, that's why he always accepts Evie's help, Denise's help, sometimes even Kevin's help. Even Kevin or Leon will come help in whatever situation they're in.
Yeah, he's not opposed to learning. He might resist it, but he's not opposed to learning or looking at himself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. And then we're going to move on to talk about what aspects of the show worked for us. Obviously, one of the things that worked for me is the good chemistry that Stan and Evie have. They are a fantastic duo. They slowly become friends, and they just complement each other. Like you said, Stan's more outdated, Evie's more modern. I'm glad that the show keeps them as friends, because it's a comedy, you don't want to get too serious, and I feel like in a lot of comedies, they always have the guy and the girl hook up.
Yeah.
And it just takes a romantic direction, and if they had taken that route, I don't know if I would have kept watching.
No, definitely, I agree with you there. That just would have been way too tropey, way too cliche, and
it would have like killed the vibe.
Right. Exactly. I like that. It would have killed the vibe of the show. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. So I think them two together are good. And obviously Denise is very cute, like I said in the spoiler-free episode. She's this naive daughter. She's the daughter we all want, maybe. Like, she's just available at home. She's there to help you when you need her.
Pick blueberries. She loves to pick blueberries.
She loves blueberries. She brings home little innocents, you know, like she rescues little animals and stuff. Or it doesn't have to be little animals. Like, she brought home a fucking goat.
And is an activist. She's an activist in her hometown.
Mm-hmm. So she's got a great heart. She gets it from both her parents. She's good, like you said, she's good comic relief.
Yeah.
So I am not the horror expert. You definitely are, Ryan, so because you've watched way more horror films and TV shows than I have. But I thought the makeup and the masks for the demons and the creatures, like the Wraith in season 1 and Horus in season 3, I liked all of that stuff. Even though it was a little tropey because most of them were just wearing black, what's it called? Not a cape.
Robe?
A robe. Most of them were just wearing black robes, probably because, you know, it's a low budget show. But I enjoyed that stuff. I think they did a really good job with the makeup and masks. I will say the effects with the evil puck bit was too freaky for me, so I did not rewatch that episode. actually, that was towards the end. That was season 3, the evil puppet episode.
Yep. Yeah, that's season 3, and I know we'll get into it a little bit later, but that's it. The show kind of begins to trail off a little bit there in season 3. Mm-hmm. But no, to your point, Chin-Lin, I thought the makeup and masks were great. I really enjoyed them. They were fun. They fit the show. The show's kind of campy, and so are the costumes, and so it works. And I could see the hand of the artist in these costumes. I could tell that somebody working in costuming and props was just so thankful to have a job working on this show and having a lot of fun putting these together, doing the most you can with, we're probably talking hundreds of dollars. I doubt we're even talking thousands of dollars for all these costumes. I mean, definitely not tens of thousands, maybe thousands of dollars, but we're not talking a budget for costumes of like 10 and 20 grand. We're talking hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars. And so they're looking at this, you know, at this small amount of money, and they're like, well, how do I do my best, or how can I make the most out of this? Turning, making lemonade out of lemons. And I can just tell that somebody looked at their small budget and they said, you know what? I'm going to do the very best job I can with that and have fun. And that's the impression that I got. Yeah, it's cheesy. I mean, yeah, you might be able to go into your local costume shop and find virtually the same thing. But somebody even had to design the ones that are in your local costume shop. So we've got somebody designing these, and they had fun. The actors had fun. And when you're working on something that's relatively low budget, you have to be having fun, because you're not really, you know, doing it. I guess maybe you're doing it for the paycheck. I mean, the actors, because they are actors. But I mean, you're like, it's, I mean, you know what you're in, and you're just going to rock it. You're going to make the most of it. And that's what I took away from the makeup and masks, is it's just, yeah, this is all you have, but you are just broadcasting it to the world because you're still proud of the job that you did, and you kept me entertained, and these monsters were fun. I really liked them.
Oh, yeah. My favorite was Gerard Duquette.
Mm-hmm.
His makeup and his costume was fantastic. Kudos to that actor for, like, just pulling it off completely. Gerard Duquette was badass, and I'm glad he came up more than once.
Me too. He was definitely a sinister villain, and kind of scary at times. And so he added a good, you know, scare factor, a good, you know, creepy horror factor, you know, to the show, which is largely comedy. But he really added, you know, that element, because he was terrifying. And so it was between the makeup and costuming and the actor himself, that we had a really great villain in this show. And I'm glad that he made more than just a monster of the week appearance. I'm glad we had him a handful of times here in the show.
He also had a great baritone, like, mm-hmm. evil guy laugh.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? It wasn't even a laugh. It was like a chuckle.
Mm-hmm. It was a creepy chuckle.
Yeah. Totally digged it. what were some aspects that worked for you, Ryan?
Oh, I think the chemistry between him and Evie was outstanding. They answer one another really well. What Evie lacks, he has, and vice versa. You know, Evie is, you know, the modern example. He is an outdated example of a worldview, so to speak. And so I love how they answer one another. I loved watching them on screen together. I don't think that either one of them is successful on their own. But the together, they just could take command of that screen and they could own all those scenes. And so I love, you know, the chemistry between those characters. Denise's comedic relief was great. I love the naivete. She's so very innocent throughout the entire thing. Even when the world's falling apart around her, she's just eternally optimistic. And so even though that optimism's out of naivete, we got a lot of wonderful practical effects. So much old school. Loved every minute of it. Yeah, we had some cheesy CGI too. But I thought they did really well with their practical effects. And, you know, it really...
They were very liberal with the blood splatter.
Oh, yes. So
and
much.
And the cutting of heads. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we got a lot of blood. So if you're a gore hound, you got plenty of gore in this series. We have, I mean, speaking of gore, it's a new twist on Evil Dead, or Ash versus Evil Dead meets Charmed, as I mentioned in our spoiler-free episode. This show focuses on character moments, you know, not just all of this action. And to Chinlin's point earlier, we learn to love Stan despite, you know, his rather offensive qualities, because we see a man who knows he's, you know, needs to change, stubborn, will resist it, argue up and down, but he knows, and we learn to love him because there's a little bit of a redemption story, and we love seeing characters redeem themselves. We love seeing characters who are willing to learn and be more than the sum of their original parts. And so I really like that about the series.
I want to mention one thing. When you talked about Stan and Evie and their complimenting each other, it reminded me of the episode in season three, the beginning of season three, where hell comes, or not hell, the land of the dead comes to the land of the living, and then like everything's like in despair, mm-hmm. and there's debris everywhere. And you know how he looks like a demon to her? Mm-hmm. And they had to like learn to communicate and understand each other to know who the other person was.
They did, and they eventually did it. I was like, and I really felt for them, like, oh, they just need to communicate. And that's like a lot of the show is about communication. And so so I really like that, because he had to work really hard to win her over.
Oh yeah, I think that was my favorite episode of them working together.
It was fun, so much fun.
He just looked like this ugly looking mummy demon.
Yes.
And like he had to resort to like his body motions to like communicate, hey, we need to kill each other, this isn't real.
Nope.
Evie being able to understand that shows how much their friendship has come along, because if that episode was in like season one, they wouldn't have, I don't think she would have understood him in season one if he was trying to communicate like that.
No, I don't think so either. I think it was perfectly positioned.
Mm-hmm. And then next up we can talk about some of our criticisms, what did not work for us in the show. No, this is going to sound bad because I'm totally feminist. I love all my strong women characters in many shows, but Evie by herself is nothing special. Like, she's kind of mediocre by herself. Janet Varney is still an excellent actress. She pulls off Evie really well. Her chemistry with John C. McGinley is excellent. But it's just Evie as a character, she doesn't have any development. The way you meet her in season one, she's pretty much the same all throughout the show. So because of that, like, she's best with other people. Like, if you're just watching a scene of her by herself, like, you can, that's kind of a moment where you might feel like picking up your phone to check your texts. Was that too harsh?
No.
No, okay. When I was rewatching the show, I had forgotten in that one episode where the guy on the TV show had hypnotized her and then she went a little cuckoo.
Oh, yes, she did.
Yeah, like I think I just missed it the first time around, and I think it's because I was on my phone. But yeah, she got hypnotized and went a little cuckoo. And then you can tell Janet had a lot of fun with that makeup and the knife.
Oh, yes. All these characters had so much fun. And it was just, you could tell. Yeah, the script is a little ridiculous. And yeah, it's just kind of, there's not much depth to anything. But they rocked it. This is a show which is just purely there for entertainment It is not meant to create thought-provoking conversations. Not that you can't closely read it and come up with some. I'm sure you can. And we've mentioned a handful of those here. But it's just there to entertain us. And you know what? That's fine. There's a need for shows and movies that are just there to entertain us. Not everything has to be, you know, esoteric or has to be philosophically mind-blowing or world-changing or introspective. Those are great things. Not everything has to be that. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, as Freud would say it. And so sometimes something that is entertaining, it is just that. It's there for entertaining, and have fun with it. You don't always have to find hidden meanings in all these shows, you know, or like, oh, this is really...
There's already shows for that.
Yes, there are. This is not one of them, folks. This is not one of those shows. This is fun. This is a fun show. It's an entertaining show. And I hope, if nothing else, that is what you get from these discussions, is you can turn it on and have fun binging something that's 20, 25 minutes long. We don't have a lot of those anymore. Everything's an hour nowadays. Well, this gives you 20, 25 minutes. I miss 25 minute shows like Santa Clarita Diet. I hate the fact that it was canceled. I really enjoyed that show. And I appreciated that each of those are half hour episodes. So I think we need more half hour shows. I kind of miss those because... Dude, that's just sometimes all the time you have to invest. Maybe you only have a half an hour to sit down and watch something. So you can't watch something for an hour. You can watch a half hour show. Or maybe there's any number of reasons. This show is, I'm just telling you, have fun. You know, give it a shot. You know, watch it. If this conversation gets you thinking, hey, this might be a show to check out. Watch it. You can't go wrong. It's 25 minutes. Even if you don't like it, you've only wasted 25 minutes. You haven't wasted an entire hour. So you can easily pick something else up.
Ryan, you already said that in the spoiler-free episode. Oh. Oh, right. Okay. Two more things I wanted to touch on that did not work for me. Also, this is expected. Most shows have a shitty last season. Like, it's not... It just happens. Like, most shows just don't end that great because the writers and producers, they don't know how long their show is going to last. So when they realize they only have a season left, like, not everything is always going to be tied up nicely.
If a show like Game of Thrones can end poorly, all shows can end poorly. I mean, if that show ends poorly, then there's no hope for anybody. You just assume the show is going to end on a low note, or just the last season. Because sometimes they find out in the middle of shooting, by the way, this is your last season. WTF? I guess we got to kind of wrap this up like really quickly. Or, hey, we want you to direct Star Wars. We want you to write Star Wars. So really quickly get through this other show. What's the name of that show again? Something about Thrones. We'll just get rid of that really fast and come over here and write Star Wars. Of course, then jokes on them. They get fired from Star Wars. It should have stuck to what they knew, what they did with Benioff and Weiss. It should have stuck to Game of Thrones and not have been solicited by the Big D offering you Star Wars money.
Oh, that's a conversation for another time, because I love Game of Thrones, and there's so much controversy with how it ended. Like, it doesn't matter to me, because in the end, I still enjoy the show.
Oh, I'm with you, Chinlin. I give it a hard time, but I still enjoyed it. I had a great time. Glad we had a show like that, which... we don't get a lot of those shows anymore, right? In which everybody in the world is like sitting down at the same time watching the same show. And I think it'll be a long time before you have that. I mean, maybe a recent example, and I didn't watch it, but the recent example could be Hamilton. Because I think a lot of people did sit down, maybe not at the exact same time, but they did sit down on the same day. But Game of Thrones, it was 8 o'clock Sunday nights or whatever it was. And so... You, like, the world was sitting down, and watching it, not not even in the same day, literally at the same time. And I love it when we have shows like that. And, you know, maybe we'll have another. And because TV, I don't, there's something magical about TV. And I like it when TV feels like TV. I don't think TV always has to be cinematic. Yeah, Game of Thrones, very, very cinematic. But I think it's like kind of, I look for something different from my TV shows. Stand Against Evil, you know, really did that for me. It was like, I like this show. It's fun. I had a good time. And so that I look back on my binge and I want to share this with other people.
I'm glad. I was just going to say the last season wasn't great, but that's okay because most shows just don't end with their last season as strongly as they hope. It was 8 episodes. Yeah, that's normal. I could have done without the Kenny episode and the evil puppet episode.
Yeah.
So if they had removed those two, I would have been okay with the 6 episodes.
Yeah, I agree. Those were, especially Kenny, the puppet I'm more okay with than you are, but the Kenny, I was like, what?
We didn't need to see Kenny again. It was purely episodic.
Yeah, we did not. And so they were just trying a lot of a lot of things in season 3 that it's like a little bit of an identity crisis, I think, is what the show is going through, because the tone changed a little, the delivery changed a little.
I wonder if they had slightly more budget in season 3 and they used some of it for Kenny's episode, because he was that giant caterpillar monster,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they probably used some of that money on that episode, because everything else felt the same to me.
I think what I noticed is a little different is we had much more, it was much more self-aware. In the third season, and I don't think it was as self, the characters had some self-awareness to them, but the show itself on a meta level didn't have this self-aware nature in the first 2 seasons. I found in the third season we had a lot more of that self-awareness. It was felt a lot more meta, and I like meta horror, but it was definitely a tonal shift, because I don't think it felt as meta the first 2 seasons. Third season to me felt a bit more meta.
And then this is coming from someone who loves witchy stuff. I wish we had more of the Black Hat Society.
Yes.
The Coven of Witches descended from the 173 or 172 that were burned. But I think they were only in 2 or 3 episodes. No more than 4 out of the entire show.
Yeah, I was expecting a lot more as well, and then it didn't really, I mean, they kind of ended, and so
yeah.
I thought it was going to be more than what it was, because I love witchy stuff, and so I was like, oh, this will be fun, and then it's just like, okay, you're just here for a couple of episodes.
Yeah, I felt like they had something that could have been used as subplots,
yes,
throughout the entire show, and it just kind of went to waste. That's just a flaw that I want to point out. Otherwise, the show is great.
Yeah, I think Denise, for me, had a lot of great potential, and we have some good Denise moments. I feel ultimately she was kind of wasted, especially as the show went on. She was less and less there, and she would just kind of pop in, do her shtick, and then leave. And I think, you know, what we had was good. I just think that we didn't have enough of it, and it just felt like a waste. And so I would have liked to have had more Denise moments. I've already mentioned, you know, Evie... comedically, she's the straight actor out of the bunch, and so and not sexually speaking, I mean comedically speaking, you guys, she's the straight guy, Stan's the funny guy, and so she on her own, I don't find her to be as funny because she's not a foil for Stan. As a foil for Stan, she's really funny. And so her character can't really stand on her own comedically. And so I think, you know, there were some times when that showed through, but thankfully, you know, Stan always came back in here. And I think it's the times in which all we had was, Leon and Evie together. Those scenes just seem to be kind of missing a little something, and saying what it's missing is Stan. So I think, you know, she needs Stan, for the whole thing to be funny. I felt the last season was a little rushed, and in some places even sloppy and lazy. And I can only attribute this to being bummed that their show was ending. But it should not have gone the route that so many shows tend to go in their final season. So it felt a little rushed and lazy. Third season even introduces a lot of concepts and characters when it really should have focused on just tying everything up with a bow. And so, but then we introduce these characters and these ideas, and then it's just like, oh, it's over. And it was just like the way the series ends, it's like, I'm ready for season four. And then, we don't have a season four. But I mean, some of that I'm probably being nitpicky just a little bit, because all in all, I liked it, and you know, I will continue to recommend it to those that I think will also enjoy it.
Did you like the finale?
I liked the finale. Like, I really was ready for season four. Give me some more, and I was. When sometimes you get the like bonus content options on you know, you fill in the blank streaming service, this one being Hulu. And mm-hmm. I was hoping that there would be like a denouement or something, just like I wanted more. And so I liked it. It was just kind of sad that it was over. You know, it's the third season curse. I think we associate that with Netflix a bit more than Hulu, but we get that third season curse, and it's just like, why? This is fun. We don't have enough shows like this, and I was ready. Yeah, I was ready to you charge into season four.
So I love the finale. I have a slightly different take with how it ended, because okay. I think it ended appropriately, because it kind of went back to the curse that was introduced in the pilot. Stan was the one sheriff that got away. He wasn't killed because his wife was slaying the demons. And then Evie comes along, and she's subject to the same curse. So they had to end it somewhere. And if they're going chronologically, it makes sense for Stan to die. But this is Stan we're talking about. He's our hero, so he's going to make the sacrifice. And the delivery was great. John C. McGinley's delivery was great that whole episode. Like, that solemn look on his face when he's talking to Denise, and Denise is with Kevin, and he's like, you take care of her, or you take care of him. at the grave site area. Mm-hmm. I thought it was an appropriate ending. Okay. I think it was fine. I didn't feel the need for a season four, even though we kind of got a little bit of a cliffhanger when old Evie is talking to that reporter and was like, oh no, that was just the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of cliffhanger is okay, because you're left wanting a little more, but everything else is tied up in a semi-bow that you're willing to accept. Denise is happy with Kevin. They're supposedly, I'm imagining them with kids at this point. Stan has made the ultimate sacrifice for Evie and other future sheriffs. The curse ended with him. And then Evie got to continue being sheriff and, you know, saved people, and we're assuming she still had to deal with demons, but not necessarily demons from Constable Eccles' curse, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. It kind of reminded me of the ending of Watchmen.
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Spoiler alert for that.
Well, this is our spoiler episode, so you're covered.
You had a cliffhanger at the end of Watchmen that is similar to Stand Against Evil, where you feel like you want more, but given how other things have ended, you're okay with how it actually ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I meant. And then last, because you brought this up many times, even in our DMs when we were just talking about the show, you thought Stand Against Evil was reminiscent of Charmed.
Yeah.
And at first, I was like, wait, really? I did not get that feeling. So after I did my rewatch, I was like, oh, okay, there's some aspects here that are similar to Charmed that some people might like. The pilot, for sure, reminded me of Charmed. Someone has passed away. They left behind a book of magic. Mm-hmm. And then three people stumble upon this book of magic in a locked room that they realize, oh, shit, there's this magical business we have to take care of now because our relative is dead.
See, that's Charmed.
Well, that's the pilot of Charmed.
Yes. I don't know. It was like the first thing I thought of. And one reason I thought about it, aside from what you just described, was our mutual love for Charmed. And then you mentioned this show. And so I'm like, this, I can totally see Charmed in this. And so that's part of what kind of preempted that. And I think it's what you mentioned. It's the monster of the week. It is the fact that we've got supernatural elements. We've got demons. So it's like a lot of that, just reminded me of Charmed, all the way down to our three characters. And so I really liked it. And it was just a combination of a lot of stuff, but I really thought, it was like, oh, this is Evil Dead and Charmed. I guess this is like the first thing I thought of. And so, that's interesting that, cause I sent you those DMs thinking, oh, this is, that you also thought that because, just for, just all the conversations we've had. So I think it's really fascinating, to hear you say that it was like, you're reading these like, what, really? And so that's very interesting.
I don't remember when I watched the first season, because I didn't watch this on TV when it aired. Mm-hmm. It was just available on Hulu when I started watching it. So it just didn't occur to me that this was reminiscent of Charmed at the time. Mm-hmm. And when you sent me that message, I hadn't done my rewatch yet. So I was just like, wait, what? Really? Okay. And then, hey, you're totally right. Especially that pilot. I'm just like, damn, on the nail, on the point. I mean, minus the potions, mm-hmm. minus the sisterly bonds, yeah. obviously, but...
Yeah, we don't get nearly as much of that. So,
but this has been such a delight to talk about Stand Against Evil. Like, seriously, Ryan, I've been trying to find someone to talk about this show for almost a year.
No way.
Isaac couldn't get into it, and then I'm part of a Facebook group for women podcasters, and I think I brought it up once or twice, but no one ever like contacted me. So. But yeah, like, you're the horror expert, so I thought you would appreciate it.
Oh, definitely. This show has, as I've been coming to be known, on Twitter and in the Potter family, Professor Horror's seal of approval. So you can take that and go and watch it. Have fun. Do yourself a favor. Have more fun in your lives and what you watch on TV.
Oh, man. You should make a graphic. Professor Horror's seal of approval.
Oh, that's a good idea. I may just do that. gives me something to work on. I kind of like that. I think I may do that.
Yeah, like a little vector image to put on stuff that you think are good.
I like it. I'm going to come up with something.
Yeah, totally. That'd be awesome. But hey, before we go, Ryan, please repeat your social media handles and please talk a little bit more about your upcoming sitcom podcast, Four's a Crowd.
Sure. Spoiler-free episode, I described the kind of show it is, but now that we're in the spoiler episode, I'm going to go into just a little bit more about it. The show's going to debut either day of or week of August 31st, so end of August, beginning of September. And it's a situation comedy about four 30-somethings that share an apartment after broken relationships and skyrocketing rent force them together in this coming-of-age sitcom podcast created by yours truly. And my goal in this show is to tell these stories that are out there that haven't been told, characters that don't seem to get the same kind of screen time that other characters get. Not every episode is about dating, but dating over 30 is certainly going to be a reoccurring theme in there, because it is a much different world. It's a much different landscape. And if you're like me and you are perpetually single over 30, especially if you're a straight female or gay male who is single over 30, you know how difficult it is, and we can pretend that stigma doesn't exist, so that's a thing of the 1950s and 60s, but I tell you that stigma is still alive today. It just looks a little different. And so it's tackling those ideas. So we have four young single professionals, and so they have careers. So they're not struggling college students. They're not high school students like we get in a lot of CW shows. You know, these are 30-somethings that have careers, and they're just through, a series of unfortunate events. They all have to move in together and share this apartment. And we, get to explore their world and how they're balancing dating with their careers and the links they go to meet people. From auditioning for community theater to attending other events like Halloween parties and whatnot. There's a reoccurring side character who is the building concierge, and she's very much a motherly figure in the show. And she is my favorite character, because she just says, she says the things that a lot of us are thinking, but we don't always say. Well, she's just like no holds barred. She's just going to say it, but she says it with such love, and she's a treasure. One of the lines in the show, though, is some treasures are best left undiscovered. Those are our characters, and so the show is going to be. It's episodic. These are half-hour episodes, and we are going to have 16 episodes altogether for season one, 8 before Christmas, 8 after Christmas, and all of our music is original. It's composed by the wonderful, to quote the Retro Cinema podcast, Alabama Songbird, Lana White. Lana White, I came to know her through her work with Gidget Von LaRue's Retro Cinema podcast, because she wrote their theme song. Loved her work on the show, so I contacted her, and it's all original music. The musical transitions between the scenes, the opening theme song, which you can find on Twitter, and I got plenty of links to it, and then even the music bed for our promo she wrote. So I love having the original music and supporting a fellow artist. And so the show is, it has the feel, the pacing, the structure of like an 80s, 90s sitcom, but it takes place in, 2020. It takes place in the 21st century. So we're going to be talking about the things that these people are encountering, you know, in real life, and have a lot of fun with it. There'll be some, you know, more thought-provoking episodes, but they're largely going to be fun. But, you know, it's, I love those TV shows, and I love how they are really such a part of Americana, and these characters came into our living rooms every week, and we still binge them. You'll find a lot of the Golden Girls, Frasier, The Nanny, Will and Grace. Those are just four shows that you'll definitely feel are being channeled in this show here. So if you like those shows, then you'll probably really like Forza Crowd. And so I brought the official promo with me today. So when we sign off, we can go ahead and have your listeners listen to the promo. You can follow Forza Crowd Pod on Twitter at Forza Crowd Pod on Twitter, and give it a follow. And you know what? There's even opportunities to be in our live studio audience. Now, maybe our studio is a virtual one, but I am creating opportunities for 3 to 5 people per episode to get to sit in, listen to it being recorded, and so the actors get that instant gratification of your laughter and clapping, and it still, it keeps that idea alive, recorded in front of a live audience. And so I'm doing my best to replicate that as well. And some of the guest stars, I might actually, some of the in the audience may recruit you to be a guest star on the show. So got plenty of guest stars. Even if you're not a member of the main cast, which is most of you, because I've got five main characters, you can still be part of the show, because as we all know, sitcoms always had guest stars. There's like one guest star or one or two in every episode. And so there's plenty of opportunities to get involved. So follow us on Twitter. That's the best place to find out when we're looking for guest stars. And since it's glorified radio, you don't have to memorize the lines. So give you the script and you have fun with the character on the show. So you too can be part of Forza Crowd through the guest star opportunities. And so this is fun. Want it to be fun for everybody, and keep that sitcom alive, which is, you know, it's kind of not quite extinct, because I think shows on Nickelodeon and Disney Channel still follow a lot of that same format. But in terms of, you know, big network TV, I mean, Big Bang Theory is now gone, and that was kind of one of the last ones. But there's something special about those kinds of shows, and I'm trying to keep it alive. So follow us, you know, join the cast, and you know, be a guest star. You know, try your hand at voice acting, and it's very I'm very thankful to all the podcasters that I interact with and follow for being part of what inspired me to create the show. And so many people have had a little part in making the show what it is, and supporting the idea, and just being part of the cheering crowd. So you all know who you are, and so I want to, so thank you very much.
All right, that is a wrap. Stick around for the promo of Forza Crowd.
Get ready for the new sitcom, Forza Crowd. Everything was coming up roses for Bradley and Cameron until...
I could just lie here with you forever.
I think we should see other people.
And as if that wasn't tragic enough...
The rent has gone up higher than annual passes at Disney World.
But they have a plan.
Turning this place into a brothel.
Could get a roommate.
Enter Allison and Dylan.
Like your endless sexual escapades.
Whole new meaning to home office.
Join these 30-somethings as they face the challenges of balancing careers and dating after 29. Coming soon to a podcatcher near you.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at bingeablespod. Or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.